It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 426. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for any show topic. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message, and I have four to play tonight. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, and send me a friend request. Follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. I have another jam-packed show. Quick update, I'm going to talk about my iPhone 5 and some of the good and the bad, and I have a couple stories from the trenches, and then a stack of email, and then all the voicemail I want to get to. So we're going to get started right away. And to kick things off, here's the first voicemail.
Hi, Mike. This is Scott, longtime listener of the Mike Tech Show. Last week, I heard you mention that you were going to be upgrading your iPhone 4S to the iPhone 5 on AT&T's network. One of the differences between those two phones is that the iPhone 5 has LTE 4G. Whereas the 4S, it said 4G, but it only actually had a 3G antenna that was capable of picking up HSDPA plus signals, which isn't true 4G. So my question is, how is your experience with the LTE network? Is it fast? Is it consistent and reliable? Do you find things loading a lot faster? Do you think it's just because the processor's faster in the phone, or do you think your data connection is really fast? Thanks for taking the time to get to my question, and keep up the great work with the show. I listen every week. Bye.
Thank you, Scott. And he followed up with this, and I'm going to answer that. And he followed up with this email, and he said speedtest.net has a free app for testing the ping, upload, and download speeds of Wi-Fi and cellular networks on the iPhone. And LTE in the Philadelphia area was just enabled about a month ago. I didn't know that. Now, I'm in the suburbs of Philadelphia. I'm outside, and I have not been in the city all week. But from outside the city, the LTE network has been phenomenal. And where I live, it has been super fast. I am so glad I upgraded and went to the iPhone 5, because that's been the biggest difference. I mean, there's been, yes, the screen's a little bigger. I thought I was going to like the bigger screen more, but you know, I just don't watch movies on my iPhone, and the bigger screen didn't make that big of a difference for me. The speed of the processor and the speed of the LTE network has just made a world of difference for me using my iPhone. I love it. I swear my LTE data absolutely outperforms my Wi-Fi in the house. I will try that app and actually try to get some measurements to back up what I think I'm seeing. But it's very, very noticeable, the speed difference for the iPhone 5. Now, my thoughts about everything. First, I was very fortunate to not have to pay the early termination fee because I had a 4S, so I'm getting out of my AT&T contract a year early. The person at the counter, I can't believe he looked at everything and said, "You have an individual, Tyler, who is eligible for the phone upgrade with no extra fee." And he doesn't have an iPhone. And I said, "Yeah, but I don't want his number." He says, "No, I can still give you the number." And I said, "Can I still maintain to be grandfathered for the unlimited data?" And he said, "Absolutely." I couldn't believe it. I saved instantly $250 because of someone being very creative at AT&T. That was so nice. I was thrilled because that was $250. Just boom, that I just saved instantly. And I should have put that back into the phone and got the 32 gig version of the phone. I only got 16 gig. I got the black one. My wife got the white one. The white is gorgeous. The new iPhone 5 white is just gorgeous with the chrome around the side, the aluminum in the back. It just looks good. And I didn't think I would ever like a white phone. But anyway, I have a black one and it just kind of looks boring and plain. Now, the next thing, they did not do a full restore. They only just activated the phone and it was left to me to go home, do a full reset and restore from iCloud, from my wife's phone and my phone. So I'll wait until the activation fee hits my bill. I'll call. I'll get that removed. My biggest complaint is the availability of new cables and accessories for this new Lightning connector. They call it the Lightning to USB, which is the cable that you need. And this is a 19-pin instead of a 30-pin. Now, the nice thing about it that I like is that you can put it in either direction for the iPhone. Very fast, very easy, and it can go in either way. That's nice. But how do you get extra accessories? Well, I had to go on eBay over the weekend and buy an Apple adapter that should have cost me $19. I had to spend $29 and then $5 for shipping, and I did receive it on Wednesday. So I placed the order over the weekend. It came from Florida, someone on eBay, and it is a real Apple case, the real Apple adapter. I had to pay a $10 premium, but I needed that extra cable. So if you take a look at some of the back orders on Amazon and other places, you are going to see that they're not scheduled to be delivered until mid-October, mid-November. So I wish Apple would have armed all of the accessory manufacturers with the specs early enough so they could be ready for the adapters. But they don't trust anybody, I think. And that's why they don't want that information leaked out. Let's talk about one of the biggest complaints of the new iPhone, and that's maps. So why did Apple even do this with the maps? I have an article that explains everything and will put it in perspective. It's called Voice Navigation Killed the Apple Google Maps Talks. Here's what happened. Apple wants the voice navigation for maps. Google would not go for that. They want that exclusive for their Android operating system. So Apple had no choice. If they want voice navigation, they had to develop their own mapping system. They have no choice. Yes, it's inferior. It's going to take time. Google's been at it much longer, and it's going to take more time for Apple to get their act together with the maps. Understand, this is why Passport is there. Why did Apple come out with Passport? That's to compete with Google Wallet. Apple has to distance themselves as much as they can from Google. That's their competitor. Google wants to have proprietary stuff for Android. Apple now can't use that. So they are in competition with each other for the phones. Understanding that, it makes sense. We as consumers don't like it because the Apple Maps is far, far inferior to the Google Maps, but we're going to have to live with this, and that's because of the relationship with Android. So if you really want Google Maps right now, then the answer is not the iPhone. You're going to be Android. Given all of those issues and problems with me, I don't use the Maps feature as much, I think, as everybody else on the iPhone. That's what I have my own TomTom for in the car. I guess I just don't use the maps in a directional for that as much. So I'm sure there's a lot of other people that are in the same boat that don't use it. But those that do, I know it's a problem. The question is, you may have to go to a third-party app and download it for the maps. Or will Google have their mapping application available for the iPhone, and will Apple add it to the store? Will they even approve it? So it's very interesting. So we'll see what happens. At least I know the answer now. Why did Apple even do this? At least that makes sense. We're going to have to give them a little time to improve the app, and I think eventually everybody will be happy. The battery life, I think, is the same as the 4S. That's what I've noticed. Again, biggest thing that I noticed was the speed, and to me, that's more important than anything else. One other thing that's very noticeable when you upgrade to iOS 6 or if you get the new iPhone 5, YouTube is removed from your operating system. You have to download the independent YouTube app from the App Store. Again, furthering this break between Apple and Google and the competition, you are going to see more of that, where any kind of built-in integration that was there in iOS for anything Google related, you're going to now have to download separate apps or be, you know, it's they got to separate themselves because of Google and their Android operating system. This makes sense. Now you're going to truly have two divided phones, that two camps where you got to pick one camp and go with it. Me, I've already made a major commitment to what I often refer to the Apple ecosystem. And since I have iMacs, I have MacBook Pro, I have iPhone, I have Apple TV, I have all the Apple products. So it just makes sense where an Android phone, introducing it now into my environment, just makes no sense for me. I was just asked today, someone asked me, what should they get, an iPhone or an Android? And I said, well, I had to ask a whole bunch of questions. Are you Windows? Are you a Mac person? And I said, even then, it really doesn't matter. You can still sync either one to either phone, but you need to get a feeling for what the end user wants to do. What are they going to sync with? What's their applications? What are they, you know, what do they want for music? Do you want to be married to iTunes and the Apple Store, or do you want to be the marketplace with Android? Lots of questions. And I only think everybody, we benefit as consumers because competition's good, and it's going to constantly push these companies to keep improving and putting out good product. We're going to force them. Apple's going to have to make good the maps. Everybody's going to go nuts on them. Just to make a totally non-technical reference, look at what happened with football and the lockout with the NFL refs and the Monday night game and the atrocity of that call. And it forced the NFL to quickly settle that lockout. We have the power as consumers and as all iPhone owners to make Apple improve the mapping system, which I'm sure they're hearing it, and it will get improved. We'll make them improve it. Before I get into the rest of the voicemail messages and the email, a couple quick stories. One, something I'm seeing and I'm experiencing with some clients or new clients, or that maybe it's the wife of a client that I have as a business client, and I'm talking to them on the phone and I'm trying to get them to go to the website where they can download the agent for instant house call so I can remote in. And here's what happens. I'm giving them the website. They can't even type miketechshow.com. So they can type it, but they are putting it in the search bar. This happened to me this week 5 times, where I'm on the phone and the user is searching for what I'm telling them and they're not putting it in the address bar of the browser. I don't know what to do to solve this. It is very frustrating. I need to step back, take a breath, as I just don't know. And it's a problem. And so many people are doing this. I mean, five times in the same week, you could imagine. I was at my wit's end with some of these people, and they finally got it when I said, look, well, I'm going to have to come to your house. This is my hourly rate, and this is what it's going to cost. It was extremely frustrating, and we finally got through. I finally got through. Is that it? I just got to suffer through and have the patience. I didn't realize there were that many people that think they're going to the website. Like when I had them, I said, I want you to go to the site, CNN.com, and they get research results. No wonder they're being infected. Think about this. If you type it incorrectly and you don't go to that site or you're just searching, you're now getting hit with a search list. No wonder. How would you like to hear this? The one person was searching. They thought they were going to Microsoft and they were trying to get support. They are so fortunate that nothing was on their system because I cleaned it and made sure. They ended up talking to someone and gave them full remote access, and it was a stranger from a strange website. And when the person wanted their credit card, that's when they realized, it dawned on them, I don't know this person. I've now allowed them to take over my computer. And he says, oh, you got a lot of errors, and you know, I'll clean that up. And I'm hearing this conversation, and I'm like, oh my, this is what I got to deal with. And I finally get remoted in, cleaning everything up, and I'm fixing their problem, which really wasn't a problem when I tell you they were trying to print a website. And this is something I haven't been able to figure out yet. They were using Chrome, and anytime they print, the preview comes in black and white. For the life of me, haven't been able to figure out how to get color turned on for this person in Chrome. I don't know how they turned it off, but all printing from Chrome is black and white. And this is what the original call was about. And I got them onto Firefox and finally got them to be printing in color, and we were happy, and I got everything cleaned up. Anyway, that was just one. We're talking five people this week that search instead of going to the site. So if you are in any kind of support, you know, scenario, even close to what I'm doing, you're going to run into this. I didn't realize it was as prevalent as it is. And I think Kate said she's sending me an email that she has a way I want to hear how you deal with this. If you have a way of getting through and communicating this to an end user, wow, I really want to hear that. Because the first thing is trying to figure out what browser are they using, because they don't have a clue. They do not know whether it's Firefox, Internet Explorer, Chrome, Opera. They don't have a clue. They don't know. So that isn't going to help us. So now I don't know where they're looking at their screen to be able to get into that address bar and type the URL where they're really searching. And then when I connect in and I see it's IE and I see that there are seven toolbars on their screen, do you need this one? Oh, no, I don't. No. So, you know, we start removing all of the toolbars. And then we find that they use a combination of Internet Explorer and Chrome. So I got them all set up in Firefox and taught them, and that was it. All right, that's one. Another one, I need a recommendation for an internet radio, a standalone appliance, a device that we could plug an RJ45 in, an Ethernet cable, that does at least Pandora and Sirius XM. This is for a restaurant, where we're moving their computers and they have a new POS system. This whole stand is being moved, and that was, they had a stereo system with a whole bunch of speakers connected in. Here's the catch. I need an internet radio that has the capability of connecting in external speakers. Now, I've looked at a couple and I've seen, but I'm not sure how easy it is to hook in four different speakers to this. So we want reasonably priced, inexpensive, internet radio, external speakers. If I can get some recommendations, I would really appreciate that. And that's for a client that owns a restaurant, a nice Italian restaurant in Conshohocken. I told them I'm going to mention this on the show tonight, and that is Trattoria Tatara's Trattoria Restaurant. It's an Italian restaurant in Conshohocken. Very good restaurant. I'll put a link to their website. The last in the trenches, so to speak, story, one of my financial advisors, where there's a group of three advisors, they share office space, and they share a single Comcast business connection, and they have a 30 meg connection speed that they've agreed to with Comcast business service. Well, they moved in there over a year ago, and they took a router with them from an older install. Now, this router is supplied by a company that manages the routers for this organization. So they have no choice. They have this router. And it's an old Cisco 800 router that can only do 10 meg. So when they started complaining about internet speeds, I was out there a few weeks ago and I started measuring. I might have talked about this, where I was seeing that they were 10 meg after the router, but from Comcast directly plugged into their router, I was getting 30 meg, 25, 30 meg, exactly what you would expect. We had to wait for the new router to come in, and they have a new Cisco, I think it's an 8801. I had to wait for this. They programmed it, got everything set last night, had the cutover, put it in. It went in with no problem. They're now getting over 30 meg. We've tripled their internet speed, but they're only getting what they finally paid for. The bottom line is, take a look. If you're measuring your speed from your internet provider, and you do have a router, make sure that if you got multiple routers in place or something in the middle, make sure that that's not the bottleneck. Make sure to do your speed tests in front of it and behind it to get all the facts so you can see if that device is limiting you or not, or maybe it's just misconfigured. And this is something that I guess more often happens when you inherit a client that's been mishandled, that hasn't had really good IT support, and you don't know what the router's configured and what it's doing, and could it be limiting the speed, the internet speed. So it's just something else to look at, something else to check out. Some iOS comments and tips from Kate.
Hi, Mike. It's Kate Eels, Katester in Kelowna, BC. Hey, I've got a quick story about working at a customer site for you. Today I was at a home-based business, and for business reasons, the owner, who really loves Apple, also has to have a PC. So last May, I was out there, and I was able to secure the PC business by fixing something and then talking up the concept of letting me come in once a quarter and make sure everything is up to date and safe. So while I was out there today doing that, she asked me if I could help her get her ISP email working on her MacBook and her iPhone and her iPad. So I'm about half a chapter in setting up your iThing for Dummies ahead of the people whose iPhones and iPads I've set up. And I was a little concerned about looking like an idiot in front of this woman who'd been using Macs for most of her adult life. But I said, look, the maintenance on the PC is going to take an hour or so, and I get to a certain point and I can't do anything else. So leave your stuff here and leave me your password, and I'll see if I can get it all squared away for you. So she did, and she went off to a meeting in another part of the house. And I started setting up the email. Now, I think most people, whether they're on a PC or a Mac, if they're having trouble setting up their email, it's either because there really is a connection problem, or because the ISP is just hooped, or mostly it's because they just don't know what settings to use. They just don't know how to do it. So I went to the ISP's website and used the settings on the page for setting up an iPhone, and the mail just came pouring in, just pouring in. And then she took the iPhone into the other room and started working through the emails after I tested that we could also send email from it. So cool, it's all working good. Then I went to the MacBook and started straightening out the settings there, but I kept getting some kind of weird error about some other device trying to access the account. And troubleshooting is troubleshooting at a very baseline level, no matter what the hardware is. So I figured, okay, if we close the Mail app for 5 minutes on the iPhone, maybe I'll be able to figure it out. And I mean, in the end, that didn't make any difference at all, and that wasn't the problem, and I solved the problem. It was something else altogether. But I went to have her close the mail program, and she had no idea, none at all, that just going back to the home screen really doesn't close the app. So here's the tip. If you don't want to eat up your data plan, and since this is Canada and the plans are awful, that's important. And no matter where you are, if you want to free up some memory on your iPhone, close some apps. All you have to do is double tap on the home button, and then that displays a bar at the bottom of the screen, and that has all the running apps on that little bar down there. So if you, I would say long press coming from the Android world. I don't know what you call it. Long press describes it. On any of those icons, it'll make them start dancing around. And once they all start dancing around, then just start pressing minus signs on the ones you want to close. And when you're all done, press the home button again. Now, I mean, I think she probably has never closed an app since she got that phone. I closed 12 and I lost count, and I closed more than 12. And I had the display open too, so you can see like how much memory is in use, and as I closed the apps, you could just see the amount of free memory going up, and she was absolutely blown away. So that one little tip gave me so much iOS street cred that I had bought myself enough time and space to get her out of her own office, get her email up and running on everything. And it worked so good that when I left, she was complaining about the volume of email she was getting. So I figure that's a pretty big success. And, you know, I cleaned her PC as well. So we'll see what comes of it. But I just wanted to pass on that tip. I'm sure somebody else, apparently people don't know this, so apparently that'll help somebody else too. Sure hope so. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Kate, for that. And I talked about that a long time ago, and it is a great basic tip that's important. And there's a lot of people right now listening, they're like, man, I don't even have an iPhone. Why do I even care about this tip? Well, look what happened to Kate. You could be in a situation where you got to support someone that has, you're just trying to set up their email, but it's on an iPhone, and it's good to have exposure to these tips on both sides. Now, I asked this real quick. I'd have to Google this to find it. How do you do that on an Android? Is there a great, easy way to close apps on an Android? Because I don't know how. I don't have an Android. But this is something that I learned early on with the iPhone, and it's an important tip to be able to double tap, because you are always running a lot of apps that don't close cleanly. And I remember doing this on my wife's phone, and it was like, oh my, I think she had you beat, Kate. I think she had like 30 apps loaded, and it was just unbelievable as I'm closing them all. And I had to show her how to close those apps, because it's a great way to get some speed back for your iPhone. Another tip, close all your apps before you're doing any kind of an iOS upgrade. It's always good to do that. Always good to double check and see what you got running. So good tip. Now, Kate also sent me an email with some Mac questions. I hope she doesn't mind. I'm going to share. I wrote her back with the answers. And she has a Mac-centric customer, and they want to sync everything to iCloud. So what I'm going to do is supply the links that there is a new iCloud 2.0. Now, you got to have Vista Service Pack 2 or greater to be able to run iCloud on the Windows machine. And you need OS X Lion, which is 10.7 or greater on the Mac side in order to get iCloud. And I'm going to give you even another tip. If you want to sync your photos with PhotoStream, you need iPhoto 11 and all of those updates in order to properly be able to sync with your photos for PhotoStream. So there's a whole bunch of upgrades that you got to go through from the Mac side, the Windows side, in order to cleanly sync with iCloud. And iCloud was introduced with iOS 5. So that's another thing. So your Apple portable device has to be at iOS 5. You really should be at Windows 7, and then you should be at OS X Lion. Thanks, Kate, for all that. Let's get to the final two voicemails, and then we'll get to the rest of the email.
Hey, long-time listener here. My name's Chris, and I just had a quick question. I'm a volunteer computer technician for an organization. We service a lot of elderly people, and malware is my enemy. I seem to get it all the time, and I'm kind of wanting to lock down the computer so they can't go to malicious sites. Also, I was thinking on a lot of Windows XP machines, if I just put them on a limited user profile, how good would that be? And my other question is there, I see some software out there like K9, it's supposed to kind of block them from going to malware sites. Is that effective? Is there another route or another tool that I should be using? Thanks much.
Great question, and I have the answer. This is what you need, and there's only one thing that you're going to purchase. Everything else is free. First, look into OpenDNS. That'll help you with stopping your clients and people that you're supporting going to basic phishing sites and some other things. It's not perfect, but it helps. You have to layer everything for security. So the first thing is OpenDNS. Now, you need antivirus. Do you really? You know, I really believe you don't even need antivirus, but Microsoft Security Essentials is fine. Microsoft Security Essentials, it's free. Rip out anything else they have, put that on. For browser, whatever browser you use, you don't have to lock down the system. Install Woot, Web of Trust. It works with Internet Explorer, Firefox, and Chrome. If they got three browsers, install the add-in on all three. What this will do is warn your user before they go to a bad website. And when they're searching in the search results, they will get little red, little green lights at the end for a stoplight or a go. And if they see stop, red, bad, don't go to it. Next, you need to actively put in something. And this is going to be also a shameless plug. I am now an affiliate for Malwarebytes Pro. I love that. I have that on all clients. You've heard me talking about this for a long time. Well, they finally allowed affiliate status. I have a link on my website where you can go click on the Malwarebytes logo and buy the Malwarebytes Pro. You can try it free for the trial version for 30 days, and this will actively stop you from going to bad sites and doing bad things. It will stop you. It'll stop you dead right in your tracks. Having this layered approach to security, OpenDNS, Web of Trust, Microsoft Security Essentials, and Malwarebytes Pro, your clients will not get infected. Or at least you've tremendously reduced the chances of them. Now, certainly if an email comes in and it's a bad email and it's got a bad attachment and they click on it and they run it, hopefully, you know, Malwarebytes will stop it, you know, and we'll see what happens, you know, but you've really, really locked their system down by still giving them full control. They can be administrator, they can do what they want, but lock them in to at least being protected. And I think this combination, works the best. If you got a better combination, let me know. Email me. Send me a voicemail. Describe your process that you know works. I've seen this work with my clients, and they are happy, and I am not getting any repeat infections. And you're going to be like, well, Mike, aren't you cutting yourself off? If they get reinfected, you can clean it again. Who wants to keep doing that? Do you keep going back to the same mechanic if they don't fix the problem? No. So you want to give a solution one time, arm them, and no matter how bad they are, they're not going to come back. Hopefully, they're going to come back for other things that they want. And once you got to feel secure in what you're doing, that you give the best solution that you can, describe, train them, do whatever you got to do. They're going to like you for it, and that's how you're going to get referrals. That's where they're going to refer you to friends and say, oh, man, my IT guy has a great solution here for getting you set up and getting you so you don't get infected. This is what you want. You want that kind of recommendation, not where, man, I keep getting infected. Even though they're doing the bad things and going to the bad sites, you don't want them to be keep being reinfected. Because they're going to be like, well, look, what are you doing for me? Now, we know we can't stop everybody from going to all the bad sites. But if we put enough things in place when they do go to them, they're not going to get infected. Here's a voicemail in response to last week's Windows 8 voicemail.
Hey, Mike, this is Mark from California. I just answered the question you had last week from, I believe it was Bruce from Great Britain, had the question about Windows 8, and you can in fact disable the Microsoft account by just hitting the Windows key, typing AC, and at that point it'll be populated. If you press the settings button, it'll be populated. I think it's the fourth one down. Disconnect Microsoft account and just go through the process and disconnect it from your account, and you will no longer need to log in with your Windows Live account if you don't want to. But I do agree with you in that just creating a new Live account, maybe use the new Outlook.com and make a little easier password for it, and then you can do whatever you want. Once you're inside there, you can add it to the mail account and set up as many accounts as you like. Anyway, that's about all I got. Keep the good work. Thanks.
Thank you for that. I know his voicemail, he kept coming in and out, but I think you get the point. And it looks like you can easily have a different, whether it be a dummy account or a non-Windows Live account. Here is some more thoughts on the Windows 8. This is from John. On show 425, Brian had a voicemail about Windows 8. I have tested Windows 8 in VirtualBox since the release preview, and I am currently using the RTM. When Windows 7 came out, I upgraded immediately. I will not be planning on upgrading to Windows 8. I missed the start button. I really do not like all of the program tiles being spread out over three screens. This may work on a tablet, but not working on the PC or laptop. I'm going to interject here. You can turn off the Metro interface. If you want the start button, StarDocs, and I'll get the link. They do have a free kind of add-in to Windows 8 that puts the start menu back. Another reason, apps such as the music app pops up accidentally and takes up the whole screen. This just happened while typing this email. This app is an advertisement to purchase music. Finally, getting back to the start screen is difficult, if not impossible. I have learned to go to move the mouse to the bottom left-hand corner of the screen to access the start screen. When I am using my PC, I have numerous programs open. I usually have a CAD program, Excel, Visio, and MS Project open on my desktop. Also, SAP may also be open. Windows 8 does not appear to be user-friendly to opening multiple programs. He has a comment here on landlines for security, and Teresa actually has a follow-up. Teresa had a good email you read in show 424, but I have a few comments. I believe freaking was the ability to make long-distance calls for free and not changing the system so a place to 555-1212 goes to 555-HACK. I have a landline going to my house. One set of wires goes to my telephone from a so-called switch. I understand once it reaches the so-called switch, it becomes digital. Questions: how secure is the system once the call becomes digital? The process for security with Amazon, Apple, etc. would be: a hacker calls Amazon, Apple, etc. to change my account. Amazon or Apple has a landline number where they can reach you. They obtain your number when you signed up for an account. Amazon or Apple calls your landline and tells you someone wants to change something to your account. They can give you a number. You call Amazon back on a number you obtained from another source other than the caller. Then confirm that the change or deny the change. Now, Google does that where they text you a number on your cell phone. And you got to receive that text code and then go back in for a double verification. I actually like that. The question he has: can a call be placed to a landline be redirected to a hacker phone? I think so. Telephone companies has had nearly 100% reliability that a call placed to 555-1212 would go to that number. The breakdown of the system is: how hard would it be for a hacker to redirect a call from Amazon to the hacker? Final question: are the phone companies proactively monitoring the system to maintain integrity of the system to prevent intrusion? I would say yes. Finally, the phone company has highly trained technicians located throughout the country to maintain the system. He has another comment here: Mac malware. Finally, on the Mac side, is it necessary to run malware or virus scan program on a Mac? I am running Lion OS 10.7.5. I have downloaded and ran Clam XAV and Virus Barrier. I don't know if they did any good. John, thank you for all your comments and your questions. I'm not saying that there are no Mac viruses, but they definitely are less likely. Now, Java has definitely impacted the Mac, and there's been lots of intrusions, and there was viruses that were discovered and malware that were coming in through Java hack, and they now make sure that you're updated to the latest version. If Java goes to launch, it'll tell you got to upgrade. I'm going to get a lot of people to disagree with me from the Mac world, but I don't believe you need to run anything yet. I'm not saying that that's going to stay that way. There's going to come the time where you're going to have to run something. Will Malwarebytes Pro have a version for OS X? I bet you in the future they will have to have that. Right now, you're probably okay. And just keep updating all of the Mac updates and keep applying them and stay on top of that, because there's lots of security fixes that Apple constantly pushes down to you. Another Windows 8 concern. This is from Jared. Hi, Mike. You have an excellent show. This email is in response to your UK listener's Windows 8 account concern. He seemed concerned about having to use a Windows Live account for an email password combo for account creation in Windows 8. He can avoid the security anxiety by creating a local account instead. The Windows 8 local account doesn't give you the nice cloud syncing, but it is a better choice for security concerned individuals. I have created both accounts in my Windows 8 testing. I personally like the local account better because I don't like being automatically logged into my email and SkyDrive when I log on to Windows. This article from How to Geek explains the differences between the Microsoft account, and that's that email password combo, and the local account. I hope this helps. Jared, I think you nailed it, and this article link will be in the show notes. Thank you very much. Let's keep going with the email. This is from Dowing, and he emailed me during the show. I don't know if it was last week or a couple weeks ago, and he has this PodCruncher app, and he couldn't get to the Mike Tech Show. And I said, manually add the following feed. The best RSS feed that you can use to get my show is http colon whack, whack, micnation.net/feed. And the word feed, and then another slash. So micnation.net/feed, another slash. That is the ultimate RSS URL to get everything I post, to get all of the podcasts for the Mike Tech Show. Keep that in mind no matter what program you use for subscribing to the show. This is from Carol. Hey, Mike, I listen to your shows and they are great. Keep it up. How do I obtain an ISO of all the Windows XP versions? I know the link for the Windows 7, but I have no copies of the XP. I have a couple of older computers I would like to reinstall and have the codes, but not the CDs. I would also like a copy of them for my tech bag in case I need them. Thanks again for all you do. Carol, I'm going to tell you how I did. This is where BitTorrents really help. I would only do this from a virtual operating system. So you got to be careful when you're trolling, searching for things like that. I would want to do this in a sandbox. So do this on a junk machine or a virtual setup. So this way, if you get infected, you got an easy out. What I did is in my virtual session, I went to a BitTorrent and got a volume license XP media because that's what I needed. And that's how I get my media. Search, Google, but you got to make sure, just in case you hit a bad site, you got to protect yourself. Once you get media and you see that it's tested and you scan it after you burn the CD, then you know you got something. And that's how, you know, unfortunately, I don't have a real link that I think I can legally share with you for being able to download the media for XP. Now, PC World has those links for Windows 7, and it's great. And since they did it, I just passed that along to everybody else. But this is how I got my Office media and all my operating systems. I have a TechNet Plus subscription, which is another way for me to get the media. This is the follow-up from Teresa, who was referenced in the Windows 8 mail. Hi, Mike. Heard you read my email last week about phone systems and call spoofing. I realized as I was listening that I had totally forgotten something. Call it a duh moment that I'm sure some other bright folks out there caught too. If we, as in all internet users, ever get IP version 6 implemented, it should take care of the scammed voiceover IP calls. It's a more secure standard than the current IP version 4. However, I expect the changeover of the standard to be abysmally slow because of the difficulty involved. Technically, they will tell us we are out of time and must switch over or run out of address space. But the internet stumbles on. It's hard to convince people that they need to change when things continue to work. I agree with that. So yes, there will eventually be a solution to that problem. But like the old switching systems, it will be with us for quite a long time. And I expect some savvy hackers to figure out a way around IP version 6. They always do. Thank you very much. This is a follow-up from Rick, who was looking to maybe take on some point-of-sale business. Thanks for the info on POS systems in last week's show. You confirmed what I had thought but didn't want to hear. I wasn't aware of how industry-specific they were. I had thought they were more vendor-specific. Anyway, thanks for the information. I don't see any reason to look into them any further. I do have another question. I have signed on Microsoft's site as a small business partner. You would be pressed to find a more confusing website from a major corporation. Seems as if they are switching to a new site, but many links take you to an old site, which then takes you back to the beginning. Anyway, I was looking at getting a TechNet or an Action Pack subscription. From my understanding, the Action Pack includes software to run your business, and the TechNet is just for testing and evaluating. That is true, but it's the same software at its core. It's the licensing. Technically, TechNet is just for testing, and that's all it's supposed to be. It's not for production use. And the Action Pack, same software, but the licensing reads, that's because you're a Microsoft partner, you can use that for production. But the Action Pack subscription says it comes with a TechNet subscription. I'm not sure about that. I'm not an Action Pack subscriber. My question is it the TechNet subscription that comes with Action Pack the same as if I were to purchase a TechNet subscription by itself? I asked the Microsoft partner customer service people, and they referred me to TechNet because they were unaware of what the standard TechNet subscription included. So I talked to the TechNet people, and they said they didn't know what the Microsoft partner people were selling. So neither knew the answer. Seems like a simple question to me. Do you happen to know the answer, or maybe a listener does? I'm not so sure of the difference. I do know there are tests that you have to take for certain certifications, I believe, to be an improved Microsoft reseller in order to qualify to be able to purchase the Action Pack. I don't think it's just something you can purchase. So you have to go through some steps. TechNet, you can just go buy it. So the question to me comes down to, I think all of the software is the same from the back end. So in terms of what's available to you, so what I would like you to do is take a look at the price. What is the difference in the price? I do know you have to jump through some hoops in order to get the Action Pack. I'm just not sure what all the details are there. If anybody can clear this up, I would greatly appreciate if you would compose an email to describe this or record a voicemail and send that to me so I can play it on a future show. This is from Steve. Bravo. Hey, Mike, just discovered you a few months back, and I am glad I did. Your podcast even managed to give an experienced IT guy like myself some great tips and utilities. This is just me saying thanks for all that, as I'm sure that it takes up a lot of your time to keep up on all of it. Your D7 app is wonderful. He goes on to talk about a link that I had for D7 and thanking me. And now I had nothing to do with the D7 app. That's just a link that I put there for other people to download. That is a good utility that a lot of listeners like. Thanks for the email. And that was from Steve. This is from Jared. And this is show 424, comments on DNS. Hi, Mike. I wanted to chime in and make a suggestion about third-party DNS providers from your previous show. We recently began using services from DNSmadeeasy.com. And I will say that they are very affordable, and the web interface to manage the account is very intuitive. I especially like how you can apply a template to multiple domains. Then, when you need to make a change, you can change the template and it automatically applies to all the domains that are using it. This is especially handy if you manage many domains like we do. Another nice feature is the DNS host monitoring service, in which they will pull your IP address, and if it is down, it will automatically update the DNS records to point to an alternate IP address. That's pretty good. This is very handy when you have a client who hosts their own email and has multiple internet circuits. This way, when their primary circuit goes down, the low 5-minute TTL, which is time to live, of the DNS record will allow convergence within 5 to 10 minutes to the internet. Their pricing is very affordable, $60 per year for the business membership, which includes 25 domains, 10 million queries per month, and 3 failover DNS monitoring hosts. Each additional domain is only $2 per year. Overall, I give this service a big thumbs up. Hope this helps others out. Keep up the great work. Regards, Jared. Jared, thank you very much for the follow-up on the DNS. I want to take a moment to thank everybody, especially those of you who emailed me this week asking for my Amazon link, which I was so glad to just email you back to you. So I really appreciate everybody using that. And that's amazon.micnation.net or miketechshow.com/Amazon. That helps support the show. You heard there were no sponsors in tonight's show, just my two affiliate mentions, which are my Amazon link and the Malwarebytes. Use that if you're going to be buying the Malwarebytes. You know I love that software. I have a lot of clients using it, and we'll keep recommending them until they screw up, and hopefully they won't. So right now, that's one of the few anti-malware programs that I would recommend actually spending money on. And I don't recommend any antivirus program spending money. I like the free version. You know, I like Microsoft Security Essentials. If you don't want Microsoft, then use Avast, okay? That's a good free one. I want to thank everybody for supporting the show, downloading and staying subscribed, and supporting my affiliates, and which really helps support the show. I thank you so very, very much. That's it. No music tonight, and we had a nice long show with lots of good info, so I hope you enjoyed it. I'll see you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.